Reading's darkest moment, facing a third consecutive 1-0 defeat, and this time at a relegation rival, George Puskás stepped up to score not once, not twice, but thrice to seal a memorable 3-1 win at Wigan. Welcome to episode 211 of the Tylehurst End podcast, and this week it is a case of I live for score. Ollie Allen is joining me, your host Mark Mayo. Ollie, we all live for score now, don't we?
We absolutely all live for score. I'm delighted for George Puskás getting his hat-trick, yes, and of course delighted as well to get the 3-1 away win.
Yeah, well, just we'll explain I live for score briefly before we jump into the recap. It is basically the first thing that George Puskás said on his first interview as a Reading player. And with the sort of broken English that a Romanian who's just moved to the country is probably likely to have, it is a slightly endearing way of him saying that he lives for goals and finally has got, not off the mark for Reading, but has made his probably, you know, the biggest impact he's made at the club so far, and certainly not before time. So we'll jump into the recap then and talk about the 3-1 win against Wigan as well as the 1-0 defeat against Leeds in midweek. Before we do that, thank you as ever as we approach the Christmas period and probably the most difficult period for people to be contributing to our Patreon campaign, which is always running up on the site. You can get a link to it on the podcast or website articles. Just that little virtual tip jar that always ticks us over and keeps us going, especially as we get into the latter weeks of the calendar year and when it just becomes a little bit harder to arrange for people to be around and whatnot. So thank you very much for everyone who continues to contribute to that. And let's jump in then and talk about what we always like to talk about on the Tylehurst End podcast, and that is a Reading win.
You're listening to the Tylehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
How Reading fans have been waiting for this moment then, Ollie. Just the hat-trick, which came in 4 minutes and 54 seconds for George Puskás. I must admit, I was at work during this game, and 1-0 throughout, you know, after Joe Garner put Wigan ahead in the first half. The last thing I would have expected was to look up at the screen with Sky Sports News on and to see not only 1-1 penalty Puskás, but immediately after that, I think it was within a minute basically, 2-1, and then the sealer to come just before time as well. And this was, it's almost the ideal away game. As I remember, it's a Reading 3-1 win at Bolton in the Premier League back in about 07. That just momentum of 1, then 2, then 3, it's just so memorable, and it couldn't have happened for a better player, really.
Absolutely, yeah, no, I agree. I was in a similar sort of position. I do media work for Barry Town, and we just finished our game because the Welsh games kick off at 2:30, and we'd lost 1-0. So obviously the mood wasn't great, and we come into the clubhouse afterwards, and there was Sky Sports News on the TV, and obviously Reading were 1-0 down at that point, and then you see one go in, and then suddenly two go in, and then a third, and it's quite remarkable. I mean, I think it's the second fastest hat-trick in Reading history. I think Trevor Senior, who holds plenty of records at the club, scored it slightly quicker. But yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, three good goals as well. I mean, the penalty as well. You know, obviously the first one, to have the confidence to take that. I mean, we know that Puskás hasn't been on the best of form of late, and you know, that can't be doing much for his confidence. So to step up and to put that away, to put it confidently down the middle with the goal as well, would have been fantastic for him. That second goal is probably the best of the bunch. Obviously receives the ball from Lucas Joao and nutmegs the defender before putting a fantastic finish into the far corner. And then, you know, the third goal's certainly not an easy finish. You know, we've seen Puskás miss chance after chance so far this season. You know, and for him to put that away first time, it's just fantastic. And yeah, I mean, as I said, I wasn't there personally, but I can imagine the scenes in that away, and was something to behold, I think.
Absolutely, and the goals, as you already said, the first penalty, I think it was a handball. We can't work out whether it was a handball or a foul that exactly was what was given. Obviously, with the various replays that you get, it kind of looks like a bit of both. But it was, as you say, nicely taken a penalty. And the second one, that's Puskás at his absolute best. We've seen it before, actually, in a Reading shirt. When he gets a bit of momentum, he's running at goal, he's holding off defenders, he has that finish in him as well. The third one, you know, as you say, was a really nice first-time finish. But from a Wigan's point of view, it's absolutely terrible. Reading just kind of stroll it into the net. And both those second and third goals come from Reading winning the ball in Wigan's half. And And that's kind of the sort of goal that I suppose we haven't seen Reading score recently. But this win, I suppose what the first thing that you can kind of say as to why, or the second thing as to why it's remarkable alongside Puskás, is that this came without Ovi Ejaria and without John Swift. There was illness and injury keeping those two out. We think Swift might be out for as much as 4 weeks, I think I've heard online. And also Gareth McCleary making his first start from centre mid with quite good impacts from the bench of Charlie Adam, Lucas Shaw and Boye as well, the latter two both getting assists. So this actually, from a position we were in last week lamenting the sort of depth of the squad, now we've actually got, you know, three players that have came off the bench and helped win with two of our best players not even playing.
Yeah, I think in the first half especially, it seemed as though we did seem to miss Swift and Ajay quite a lot. I think, you know, we did have quite a few chances. I think we had 13 shots in that first half, but only one of those went on target. So I think you can see that, you know, that there is that lack of creativity. Perhaps obviously, you know, Gareth McCleary's not played that much football of late and isn't a natural centre midfielder. He's obviously more naturally a winger. And then when he was moved out wide in the second half, when Lucas Jarre came on and Reading switched to a 4-4-2, McCleary went out wide and obviously played a lot better and got the assist. And I think certainly for that third goal, McCleary was fantastic. I mean, you know, that high press, winning the ball back and then putting the ball across for George Puskás. But yeah, no, the subs were great. I think you have to credit Byrne for that. He was spot on with all the substitutions. I think especially, you know, bringing Lucas Jau on for Michael Morrison and switching that to a 4-4-2, really. I mean, there's not an awful lot of point playing three centre-backs against a Wigan side, you know, who aren't really offering much going forward and, you know, sort of seemed happy to sit on that one goal lead. So I think that was quite a proactive substitution. I know he said that he was thinking about making it at half time, but, you know, very, very pleased he did make that switch and Reading did seem to be a bit more, you know, attacking wise going forward after that. Obviously, you know, we got the three goals. So, you know, from Byrne's point of view, you know, I think his subs worked perfectly. Lucas Boye as well, so you say, got the assist, winning the penalty. And even Charlie Adam, you know, I think, you know, if he didn't get an assist or anything, but, you know, his arrival on the pitch clearly coincided with Reading going forward a bit more. He came off of Pele, I think, who, you know, by all accounts was quite underwhelming in his appearance. So, you know, even someone like Charlie Adam, you know, who we thought, you know, would be a bit part player this season, you know, I think has got injured a couple of times and, you know, certainly won't play a key role for us this season. But it's good that we can, you know, call on these players, you know, in these key moments. You know, Charlie Adam's a very, very experienced midfielder. You know, he might not have the quality that he used to have, but, you know, he's one of those players that will try and galvanise a side. And, you know, you can't really argue with, you know, three subs coming on and three goals being scored after them coming on as well.
For me as well, it's the entire reason that we signed Charlie Adam, was to come off the bench and to make these sort of impacts, because starting games and coming on when we're winning, it's not really the sort of thing that you need a sort of ageing playmaker to do, to be honest. But as it happens, I want to talk about kind of the bad news of this game, which I suppose was the entire first 70 minutes. But in terms of where this leaves Reading, obviously with the table, we've not really moved too far up. Everything after two defeats and a win is kind of as it was for the last few weeks since we've nudged away from the relegation zone. But seasons can turn on very small moments. If you think last year, it was a quick free kick for Mo Barrow, which then helped him score the equaliser at home to Wigan in a game that Reading went on to win, which really sent us away from the relegation zone. This year it could have been, you know, the handball penalty or whatever the penalty was for the leveller this time. Does this win solidify Reading as a proper non-relegation contender, basically? Because obviously if we'd have lost, that is the sort of game that we think, actually, we're not really going to be so comfortable this year.
Yeah, I think it was certainly a game that we should have at least been looking to get a point off beforehand. You know, I think, you know, Wigan were in very poor form going into it. I think they'd won in six games going into the game, and obviously we're in a relegation zone. So I think if they'd won that, as you say, we'd probably only be about 2 points above it, you know, and sort of looking over our shoulders a little bit. But, you know, I do think Wigan probably will be in trouble this season. They don't seem to have an awful lot of quality. Paul Cook sort of seems to be running out of options of what to do with that team. But so to get that win, yeah, it's massive. And I think, you know, you can't underestimate how big that penalty is either. I think certainly if Puskás had missed it, then his confidence would have been completely gone. If it wasn't already, and Reading may well have not got back into the game, because obviously, you know, after the penalty, it was what, under a minute until we got the goal to go ahead. So yeah, you know, that the fact that we turned it around so quickly, I mean, those 5 minutes could end up being, you know, the five biggest moments, of the season so far, because we just saw Wigan crumble, Reading sort of go into the ascendancy, and in the end it's quite a comfortable win from what was looking like quite a disappointing defeat.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? This is for 70 minutes. I mean, for the first goal, I will say that I don't think Raphael's done particularly well with a header. Yes, it's down and hard and low, but he does kind of spill it into the danger area and it gets tapped away because of it. And from then on, Reading, they're miles ahead in shots, dribbles and aerial battles in terms of the stats. So you can say they're not doing too badly, but it was turning into the classic impotent Reading performance that we kind of lamented, I guess, against Brentford and Leeds more recently in the 1-0 defeats there. But if that had been the case, that we see out that as a 1-0 defeat, it really does, we really would have been left in a state of saying, well, the attack, which was kind of, you know, wasn't great under Jose Gomez, had receded back into its initial form. And it would have showed again that Ajaria, Swift and to an extent Baldock were carrying this Reading team. And thankfully, we're now in a position where hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah, no, we've seen it so many times, you know, not just this season, but over the last few years as well, that we just haven't been able to take our chances. And the fact that it was that we were able to put them away on Saturday was great. I mean, whenever I think of Wigan away, I always think of that Jordi Gomez hat trick in the Premier League, and it just seemed as though for sort of 70 odd minutes that it was just going to be another one of those bad away days that you sort of get quite excited for. You know, we've made a good start under Bowen, and, you know, perhaps unlucky to lose to Brentford and to lose over the past week, and you sort of go into this game, you know, hoping to get back to winning ways, and you go 1-0 down in the first half and don't really offer an awful lot. But, you know, those last 20 minutes will more than make up for it. And yeah, it's a real, real positive that we can get wins without John Swift and Ajaria, who have arguably been, you know, our two most important players this season. Obviously, we don't want them out for too long. I think, as you say, Swift might be out for 3 or 4 weeks, but Ajaria should hopefully be back next week. But, you know, we will face tougher teams than Wigan this season. I think Wigan will be in trouble this year. I think they'll definitely be in contention for that bottom three come the end of the season. But yeah, it'll be a real, real confidence booster, not just for Puskás, but for that whole team as well, I think.
It's funny you should mention that that Jordi Gomez goal, because I'm pretty sure that's the last time we were beaten away at Wigan, maybe one since then, because we've actually 4th win in 5 versus Wigan now. So they're a pretty decent team for us to be facing. We've got a bit of a spell on them at the moment. It was our first away comeback win in the league since January 2017, when we won 3-2 at Bristol City from 2-0 down. It was also the first time we've scored 3 away from home since September 2018. That was against Preston under Paul Clements. So, man in charge these days, Mark Bowen, let's hear from him, and then we'll come back in and talk a little bit about the Leeds defeat that was on Tuesday night.
He got it. I'm delighted for him, because as soon as we got the penalty, you know, some of my staff said, well, should Charlie take it or somebody else? It had to be George for me, you know, and it was probably a turning point in his season, hopefully, that he had a chance to step up, put it away, and I knew he'd grow from that. And I think that certainly the last 15 minutes he showed that there'd be the qualities he's got, and he has got them. It's been difficult for him, and I know the fans have been a little bit impatient, but with him, but it's not so much his qualities. I blame myself and us in not getting him enough quality. You know, if he gets quality balls in and he gets a bit of confidence, he'll score goals.
After, well, I suppose before the Wigan game and the last minute goals that secured Reading the 3 points, Ollie, was the late goal that Leeds scored at the Mad Stad to take away a point from Reading, which I think would have been thoroughly deserved. And a quick word on this game, because Reading at home to Leeds, it's that classic situation of, you know, certainly in the last few years, what is going to happen? Are they going to come out and blitz us like they did last season? Are they going to come out and it's going to be a tight, nervy game? We don't tend to blow Leeds away, do we? This game, Reading defended. It was the best defensive performance I've seen under Bowen, and I suppose for a long while in that sense, because Leeds tried a lot of their usual sort of trickery, usual through balls, didn't work out for them until 3 minutes from the end when a cross that I thought at the time was a beautiful ball in gets tapped away at the far post. Turns out it was a deflection, which is even more gutting, I think. I think I'd rather it had been a beautiful ball in. Reading come away with a 1-0 defeat, and obviously we've got the hindsight now of a victory from that, but at the time I wasn't too unhappy with the way that Reading had performed in that game.
Yeah, I think they could have felt a little bit hard done by after that one. I think probably on the balance of play, for me, Leeds just about edged it. I think certainly in the first half, I think Reading matched them man for man, and I thought were fantastic defensive, as you say, and did carry that on to an extent into the second half. I think as the second half did grow on, I think Leeds, you know, worked their way into the game, and you can see why they are right at the top of the table. I mean, as much as Wigan will be down there this season, I think Leeds will definitely be up there, and it might well be the season that they finally clinch promotion. But you know, they're full of hard workers. You know, they don't stop running. A lot of quality players in there. So yeah, no, I think to come away with a 1-0 defeat, I think in the wider context, is certainly not a bad result at all. I mean, as you say, we lost 3-0 at home to Leeds last season, and you know, and I think they beat Middlesbrough 4-0 as well yesterday. You know, and similarly, I think Brentford, obviously we lost 1-0 against last weekend, they beat Luton 7-0 yesterday. So I think a pair of 1-0 defeats against both of them doesn't look too bad at all, and I think Burn can certainly take a lot of promise from it.
Well, yeah, and 9 times out of 10, I do think that cross does fall into the stand and we take a 0-0 draw. And maybe even on the sort of times when, you know, we're playing, I suppose we didn't have Sam Baldock for that game, Mate and Puskas up front looked pretty poor. They looked pretty poor for 70 minutes against Wigan as well, until the substitutes, and I think Mate got put out wide, didn't he, for the end, maybe even taken off. But for the majority of that Leeds game, I think Reading were pretty comfortable. Now, what I did enjoy as well was the battle between Ovi Ejaria and Calvin Phillips in the middle, which is two players who I think are absolutely destined for the Premier League. And really, you know, we find ourselves in a situation now where we can play teams like Leeds and not, you know, I suppose earlier in the season we had that 4-1 against Fulham. I'm not fearing that we're going to be beaten heavily. Obviously, I'm fearing that we're going to get beaten by these teams, but I'm not going into it thinking, oh God, what are the chances of a collapse now? And that is something to be comforted by.
Yeah, for sure. You know, look, we've said for a long time that there's an awful lot of quality in this Reading team. You know, you look at the players throughout, so, you know, the likes of Ejaria, Swift, you know, Matt Miazga coming in from Chelsea. You know, we all know what Liam Moore can do. Michael Morrison's obviously a very experienced centre-back at this level. You know, there's an awful lot of quality in this side. You know, I would agree. I don't think we'll be blown away by anyone this season. Maybe once or twice. You know, but I think, you know, even last season, you know, we played very badly at times. But again, we didn't lose too many games that heavily. And I think we actually have, I think possibly the fourth or fifth best defence outside of the top six at the moment. You know, which considering our league position, you know, it isn't too bad at all. So I think, you know, we've got that strong base of that five at the back, and I think, you know, it makes us quite hard to break down. As I say, you know, Leeds won 4-0 yesterday, so a 1-0 defeat, you know, certainly it isn't that bad at all.
Well, you're absolutely right in saying that Reading have the best defensive record outside of the top 10 at the moment, which is certainly no mean feat. And I think that in the mailbag we'll jump into now, sadly the defence won't be getting too much credit in the mailbag, because everyone wants to be talking about that man, Puskas. So let's jump into that now.
Send in your views to thetilehurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Scott from the States opens up with the emphatic, "What just happened?" he asks on Twitter after the Wigan game. Seriously though, he says, "What/who gets the most credit for that incredible turnaround? Boye earning the penalty, Adam in midfield, the switch to 4-4-2, or did everything finally just click for Puskas?" For me, I am tempted to say that whether this is because of the formation or because of the personnel, but the way that Reading developed a bit of a high press in that second half, went and caught an obviously tired Wigan side in possession twice, that, you know, merging with the fact that everything finally clicked for Puskas, and that the chances that fell to him, he took both of them as well as the penalty. I'm tempted to say that those are the two sort of key elements for me. The fact that Reading went and won the ball and had enough attacking players in the right places and they took their chances. It sounds simple, but Reading aren't the sort of team, in my opinion, that can do that for the entire game. So to do it for that sort of intense 15-minute period kind of did the trick.
I don't think you can underestimate, you know, how good a tactical switch that was from Mark Byrne, taking Michael Morrison off, who has been fantastic this season, but bringing Lucas Xiao on and going to that 4-4-2, because, you know, we've seen in the past that over the last 2 years, I think especially under Yap Stam and to Gomez to an extent, that Reading have just lacked the plan B. That, you know, when it's not quite working for them, you know, from the start, that managers might make substitutions or tactical switches that they don't really know. Obviously, Jose Gomez played four strikers at one point early this season against Charlton in an attempt to sort of get back into that game, and that didn't work at all. And the fact that Bowen, you know, knew what he was doing, you know, as I said, he said that he thought about making that change at half time but didn't, and sort of kept off for a little bit. But then did make that change and switched to 4-4-2, which isn't a formation we've seen Reading play too often over the last 2 years. And obviously, you know, with our lack of wingers, I think it was McCleary and Mate that went out wide, and then Mate was replaced by Boye. But that switch, I think, was massive for Reading. And I think we might well see them play the 4-4-2 over the next few weeks if John Swift is out injured for that time. Because, you know, as I say, I don't think Pelé particularly impressed. Gareth McCleary certainly isn't a natural centre midfielder, and Charlie Adam can't play for the full 90 minutes. So the fact that he's identified that he can play that formation as a backup when the plan A is not working, I think is something really, really promising.
I was just going to say, Ashley, with the 4-4-2, what do you think the Reading are going to start games like that, or do we think that it's just going to become our sort of plan B? Because at the moment, I sense that it's probably going to be the latter. It's probably going to be something that we can drop into. Obviously, with John Swift not playing or not being fit, I still don't think that's going to change it too much in terms of favouring the sort of 3-5-2 to begin with, because you're left with Winamoto and potentially Ajaria, if he's fit, as the two-man midfield then. And those are two very talented players, but are they a partnership? Are they good enough defensively? Pelé, he's not brilliant, but in a sort of tactical setup and in a manager's mind, is he not going to be kind of just, you know, on the safe side at the very least? And if we're playing, you know, we've got Birmingham at home next week, surely that 3-5-2 with Pelé is good enough to win the game from the outset without having to change the system from the start.
Yeah, no, I would probably agree. I don't particularly rate Pelé, but, you know, he can do a job in there, and he's had a couple of good moments. I think when Swift is fit, I think Swift, Ajaria and Rinomoto are the go-to three. But, you know, I think for now, I think Pelé is probably fine in there. You know, we haven't got any particularly challenging games coming up. I think, you know, we might talk about it later in looking ahead to Birmingham. But the run of games that Reading have got coming up, you know, doesn't look particularly difficult on paper. You know, we've got past this period of now of playing Leeds and Brentford and QPR. And we've got a couple of, you know, relatively easy games on paper coming up, you know, Birmingham, Barnsley, Stoke in the next couple of weeks. So I think Pelé's probably fine to fill that gap for now. But, you know, as we saw on Saturday, you know, if it doesn't work, then we can switch into that 4-4-2. You know, obviously the problem with the 4-4-2 is, as I say, we don't have that many natural wingers. Obviously, as I say, McCleary and Mate and Boye played there at the weekend. But, you know, that might be something to think about in January if Burton does want to switch to that 4-4-2 more often in games, you know, whether he wants to sort of bring in a winger who he can bring off the bench to sort of give Reading that energy, you know, or if he wants to look to the academy, you know, with the likes of Michael Elise and Josh Barrett. So, yeah, it gives him something to think about. And as I say, it's definitely good to be a bit more flexible.
Well, I think there's a man called Sonny Aluko who might be coming back to the club in January. Not saying he's going to be playing, but I think his loan spell in China ends in January. So if Bowen wants a ready-made winger coming back into the club with a bit of Championship experience, who knows? Don't rule it out. I'm not saying I'd want it, but don't rule it out is the idea of Aluko coming back in and filling that sort of hole, or at least getting the chance to. Simon Povey asks, Puskas has definitely got something about him. but you can see it's a confidence thing with him. Some of the comments this week have been pretty poor towards him. If he gets a big cuddle from us fans, he will score shed loads. And Andrew Savory adding, can Romanian nationals get knighted in this country? Sadly, I've not spent the time to go and check that, but I must admit I kind of doubt it. In the terms of Puskas and confidence, Ollie, I think we probably agreed on this before, that it's absolutely a confidence thing with him. For goal scorers, particularly young goal scorers, I think they need to just, you know, find a groove and to not overthink things. Those, you see a lot of strikers, the chances where it falls to them and it's a snap and it's a finish, they tend to do a lot better with than the ones when they're running through on goal and it takes them ages to think about what they've got to do. Ironically, Puskas is a little bit different because you watch his goals back and they tend to be the ones where he's got a bit more time to think about it. But hopefully, off the back of this hat trick, as Simon says, the fans are obviously going to be singing his name for the Birmingham game and all the rest of it. Hopefully, this is the sort of thing. It's exactly the sort of tonic he needs to get his form going long term.
Yeah, it's very, very clear that he's got an awful lot of talent. You know, you don't get signed for £8 million if you haven't got talent. You know, we've seen, you know, he scored goals in Serie B and Serie C in Italy, and obviously did very well for Romania at the 21s European Championship in the summer. You know, so he's definitely got that quality. You know, it's definitely confidence thing. You know, look, we saw it against Cardiff when he scored two very good goals against Cardiff, and then it didn't quite work out for him. But I think obviously, you know, time will only tell whether this can be the boost that he needs. I mean, he's playing in a new country. You know, it's only been what, you know, 3 or 4 months since he's moved to England. So, you know, that, I think that can have an effect on someone like him. But if this can be the confidence boost that he needs, then, you know, he could be a really, 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 really deadly choice for Reading up front.
Yeah, absolutely. And Elliot says, how many goals will Puskas finish on this season? Is today the turning point for him where the penny has finally dropped? I think we hope, obviously, that today is the moment the penny drops. In terms of how many goals he's going to end up on at the end of the season, he's actually currently, I'd say 19th, but obviously that's joint with various other players. With 6 goals at the moment, he's 19th in the goal-scoring sort of ratings for the Championship, which isn't too bad, really, I suppose, when you think about it. But he's on 6 at the moment. If I was to put a number on it now, I would say I think he's going to end up between 12 and 15. I don't think he's going to go on and have an amazing goal-scoring run between now and the rest of the season. I still think that he is capable of maybe in the next 4 games he'll score 4 goals, but then he could well drop off again, and he could certainly go another 10, 12 games without scoring, and then he might rise up again and score another 6 or 7 towards the end. I think for now, or certainly for this season, I can see him being quite a streaky player, and that'll keep him between like 12 and 15 goals, I think.
I think for the money we paid for him, you're probably hoping for a 20 goal a season striker, which probably isn't going to happen this season. But, you know, for a striker that's signed for £8 million and one that's broken our transfer record, I think you've got to be hoping long term that he can be consistently getting 20 goals a season. But yeah, I think as long as he, you know, doesn't, as long as this isn't it for Puskas this season, I think that I'll be happy. I think, you know, we've got other players who can score goals. You know, we've got Sam Baldock, Lucas Shaw, Lucas Boy, Yaku Mate, you know, who can all score goals, and, you know, from the midfield as well, John Swift and Ovi Ejaria. So, you know, the burden's not massively on Puskas to score 20 this season, but. I think obviously you want someone to lead the line, and I think if Puskas can get around that sort of 12 to 15 mark, and you know, Mate gets, you know, 10 or something, and Lucas Shaw gets 10, then I think we'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, well, that was the kind of problem last season, wasn't it? As the Mate was kind of the only one scoring goals throughout much of it. And just going back to the Leeds game, Alan Scott has sent us in a tweet saying, for me, Reading definitely showed too much respect to Leeds, especially at home. We have the ability of the team to match these teams. Sitting back, soaking up pressure, waiting for them to score was always going to be the outcome. Discuss what you think about this. And in terms of our approach to the Leeds game, Ollie, I would just say that the Leeds are kind of a unique example in the sense that the way they play football is kind of, you know, they're kind of a loaded in the way they set up in the division. Am I upset that we kind of sat back a little bit? I think in the early days of Bowen's sort of tenure and in the early days of this sort of formation as a setup and as a tactical team that we're trying to be, I'm not too upset about it. Obviously, you know, if we are battling for playoffs and all that sort of stuff, I would like us to go and take the game to teams, and that's how I, you know, even now it'd be brilliant to watch that. But for now, I think I'm just about willing to say, okay, we can sit back and soak up the pressure, because ultimately against Leeds, it worked. Their goal against us was on the counter attack. So I don't know if you, Ollie, think that Reading kind of in the big games, you know, Brentford and Leeds, we both games just came up, we kind of did sit in a little bit. Would you like to see that change, or maybe do you think that's kind of how we are going to be for the next few weeks at least?
I think it's very difficult. I think, as I say, Leeds are one of the best teams, if not the best team, in this division at the moment, with a very good manager, with a very, as you say, unique style of play. And I think that there probably is a slight risk that if we had gone for it against Leeds a little bit more, than they may well have scored more, and they may well have capitalised on us being a bit more open. As you say, their goal came from, I think it was John Swift free kick that went into the wall, and then Lucas Boye couldn't hold on to it, and they broke away and scored. So I think that there is certainly that risk that if we had been a bit more open, a bit more attacking, then they would have punished us. And I think for now, I think when Reading are sort of trying to be a bit more stable, I think maybe towards the end of the season, if we are, you know, I say needing results, you know, hopefully not needing results to survive, but, you know, maybe needing results to get into the playoffs or whatever, that might be wishful thinking. But, you know, we might want to go for it a bit more then. But I think, as you say, in Mark Burns' early days as manager, I think he wants to try and, you know, keep this side as stable as possible. And, you know, against a very, very good Leeds side, I think from my point of view, he was absolutely right to try and sit in a little bit.
Well, and as I said, it did nearly work. So hopefully next time we face a good team, we will be a little bit more prepared, and maybe we'll be thinking about coming out a bit more. But as you know, as Ollie said earlier, we haven't really got a big team on the horizon just yet. We'll jump in to talk about the next game, that's at Birmingham at home, in just a short while. But first, we're going to jump into news bites now and talk about a pretty major change in the offing in the Reading backroom.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Ged Roddy, it appears, has left the club as the academy manager at Reading FC. He has only been in the role for about 2 years, previously in the FA and sorting out there, and, you know, setting up the entire academy sort of hierarchy, as it were, for the country's football. And now he's left his time at Reading. It appears, it's been reported, that he kind of had wider issues communicating with the wider community and with players' families, and he's been moved on and replaced by Michael Jilks, who's a very familiar name to Reading fans. Obviously a former winger, played hundreds of games for the club, has been in and around the academy and the first team for a few years now, and he has been reportedly moved up into this role. It was supposedly going to be announced before the Wigan game, Ollie, and unless I completely missed it, I didn't think that did happen. So this is a change. I suppose it's an unexpected one, really, isn't it?
Oh, I was sort of half expecting Mark Bowen to be appointed as academy manager.
There is always that danger now, isn't there?
Indeed, yeah. No, but I mean, I always thought Ged Roddy always came across quite well in his interviews. I think he did a few for the website and for YouTube and stuff, and he always seemed to come across quite well. And obviously, as you say, arrived at the club with huge pedigree with his work at the FA and the Premier League. And I think he set up the whole elite player performance system that's used to grade academies now. You know, so he came in with an awful lot of pedigree. You know, and the academy did continue to thrive under him. You know, we saw a lot of players make their debuts last season. You know, likes of Tom McIntyre, Teddy Howe, Gabriel Osho, and obviously the emergence of Andy Rinomata. So it's not as if the academy was failing under him, but as you say, if there are those murmurs behind the scenes of a lack of communication with the community, which is obviously something that Reading pride themselves on massively, you know, then perhaps a change was needed. And obviously, you know, Jilks is a club legend, which is always good. And, you know, he knows the club, he knows the community. So from that point of view, I think obviously from the club's point of view, you know, he's the perfect fit in many ways. You know, he knows what it means to play for this football club, and hopefully, you know, can work that into the young players and sort of you know, show that they understand what it means to play for the club. So look, I can't comment too much on it because I don't know the full ins and outs of what's gone on behind the scenes, but look, if the academy at Reading has been fantastic over the years, and you know, I think, you know, long may that continue, and hopefully, obviously, you know, with the new training ground and whatnot, that can only get better. And as I say, you know, Jilks is a club legend, so it's great to see him in that role.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? If anyone knows what it's like to play for Reading and all the rest of it, Michael Jilks is hopefully that man who can get that across to the young players and breed the new sort of generation. And you mentioned the new training ground there. Reading actually trained, the first team trained at Bearwood for the first time during the week. So a nice step there before their men are moving full time into the new training ground after the summer. Let's clear up what's happening in the academy teams then and the other teams of Reading Football Club. The under-23s, they won 3-2 at home to Charlton in the Premier League Cup on Thursday. Adam Liddell with a brace, including a late back-heeled winner. They're away to Newcastle on Saturday in Premier League 2. They're currently 7th in the table. The under-18s are currently 10th in their Premier League table. They lost 5-3 to Norwich on Saturday. They've next got Spurs on next weekend. And the women, another late goal, the last kick, earning a point at Brighton on Friday night in the WSL. So they're currently 6th in the league, 1-5 in the league now. So a good little bit of form for the women's team. That will be tested on Sunday the 8th, 2:30 p.m. at Adams Park. Go along and watch them take on, I think, Arsenal are the league leaders at the moment. So Arsenal women coming down to Reading.
They won 11-1 this afternoon last women, so that'd be a very, very difficult game for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing with women's football. There are three or four teams in that league that are just miles better than everyone else. So hopefully, if you're on the fancy to going down to Wickham next weekend, then hopefully there'll be a bit of an upset on the cards if Reading can get a good result there. Wishing them all the best in that, as per usual. And speaking of good results, Reading have come out number one in the Championship in a recent fan engagement survey. That was 8th in the country, Reading were. I think there's mostly League One and League Two teams, and maybe, I think there's Leicester as well in the top 10. And
or then Norwich.
Reading, or Norwich, that was it, in the top 10. And then Reading, top of the Championship, they got rated very highly for fan engagement, which is as a leading fan podcast. We're very happy that is the case. But I think this is more for the fact that Reading have been very open with Star and with the fans forums and just their general sort of outreach to the community. So Ollie, I suppose from us sitting here as the humble Reading podcast, I suppose this is a good sign.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. You know, we've seen the podcast over the last few weeks. Obviously, the one we did with Jordan Abita and the one with Jose Gomez as well early in the year. And obviously, the one on Elm Park Royals, who've had Liam Moore on twice. You know, it's been fantastic, and I can't think of too many other clubs that sort of organise that access, you know, for sort of key supporter bases. And as you say, they're very good with Star. You know, the fan forums, I think Mark Burns already had one fans forum, and he's only been in the job about, you know, a month and a half or so. You know, so I think, yeah, the club are fantastic in that respect, and you can only sort of praise them for that. You know, you see it quite a lot, obviously, in the modern football era, where these top football clubs, you know, are sort of very, you know, corporate, very commercial, and they don't care an awful lot about their supporters, is what a lot of people say. So, it's fantastic that Reading, obviously, it's always been a club that's cared a lot about the community and cared a lot about the fan base. So, it's fantastic that there's now some stats to back that up.
Yeah, congratulations to the guys running the club and girls running the club for getting that sort of recognition, and long may it continue, as we certainly feel here. And speaking of fan engagement, we'll have a week's break for the main podcast coming up, but there will be a podcast in midweek because on what day was it? On Thursday, I went down to a pub in central London and met a man called Simon Cox, who is obviously a name that Reading fans are very well familiar with, someone who came through the academy, left and then came back and experienced a very interesting period in the club's history under Nigel Adkins, Steve Clarke and Brian McDermott, and then left just before Yap Stam came in. So I went and met Simon, and that podcast and interview, just over an hour. So lots covered, lots of Eamon Dolan, and Brian McDermott talked about his feelings under Steve Clarke and how he was treated by him, and obviously the Peace Cup and all the sort of things from his first spell at the club. So lots talked about with Simon Cox. Keep an eye out for that in midweek. That'll probably be on Thursday morning. That'll go online. So look out for that, and thank you very much to Simon for coming online or coming on the show for that. And we'll head on then, as it's a free week before we go into Saturday's game. Let's talk about that one. In big game preview, it is Birmingham at home.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
So Birmingham on the outset, Ollie, are not the most entertaining of teams for us to be facing. They seem to have a very standard 4-4-2 with a big man like Lukas Jukić up front. They've drawn their last three games 1-1. They've only won 2 from their last 10 on the road, and they're winless in 5 overall. So I think we're probably just about facing a team that we think we should be beating.
Yeah, it's definitely winnable, that's for sure. I think Birmingham will probably be there or thereabouts this season, about where they are now. I don't think they'll be pushing at the top of the table, but I don't think they'll be troubled by relegation either. But yeah, it's definitely a side we should probably be beating at home, especially, you know, I think obviously before the Leeds game, we'd won 3 in a row at home under Mark Burton. So yeah, I think it's not one of those games against one of the better sides in the division where we might have to sort of be quite defensive. I think we can go for a little bit more. Hopefully Ovi Ajayi will be back, which will be good news, and hopefully George Puskas can carry on scoring as well.
A bit of a quiz question. I know that you've looked at the plan, but I don't think you're looking at it right now. And can you tell me the last time we beat Birmingham at home in the Championship?
I am actually looking at the plan right now.
Don't look at the bit that says the last time we beat Birmingham at home in the Championship.
I will cover that up. But is it a player such as Danny Guthrie, something like that, something along those lines?
There was a player called Danny Guthrie who played for Reading, and in the last time that we beat them at home in the Championship was September 2013, when Guthrie scored twice. And for the life of me, I cannot remember this game. I couldn't find the highlights on it, but the only thing that I could find on the internet to refresh my memory of this was the fact that Danny Guthrie did an interview with the club where he praised his lucky haircuts, which was an awful mohawk, and presumably wasn't lucky for very long, because, as we know, Danny Guthrie did not last very long at Reading. And since then, we've had 2 draws and 3 losses at home to Birmingham in the Championship, which it's quite surprising, really. But actually, now we think about it, there's quite a lot of very... It's always been, in the last couple of years, it's been that sort of typical game of, quite often on a midweek night, play Birmingham, they're not a brilliant team, and yet we somehow lose it, and it somehow sums up the sorry state of the club, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the one last season was the 0-0 draw on the last day of the season. It was really, really bad, I think, apart from John O'Shea's guard of honour about 5 minutes from the end.
And Portugal Day, I think, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I think that was the only thing memorable about that. Obviously, Reading had secured survival by that point, so it was a bit of a, you know, party occasion for all concerned. Yeah, I think obviously the one that you're drawn to is the 2-1 defeat on the last day of 08-09. Obviously that one sticks in the mind a little bit, but yeah, no, we don't seem to have that many good games against Birmingham, but as I say, if we can get a 1-0 win out of this one, then I'll certainly be happy.
Well, yeah, here as well, and we'll talk about the prediction league before we round off the show. There's been lots of points scored this week. Ollie, you got Leeds spot on, with myself, Westy, Johnny and Sim also predicting defeats. Handbags then nailed Wigan, with yourself, Ollie, again getting a win, and Sim getting that one right too. So the standings as it stands, myself on 19 points, then a bit of a drop to Johnny on 12, Ollie 11, Westy 10, Wim and Sim on 9, and then Handbags on 8. So the battle for second is really hotting up, if I may say so myself. So Ollie, what do you think then for Birmingham?
I don't think we're going to see too many goals. I think I don't think Birmingham have scored that many goals this season. I think they've clearly missed Che Adams, obviously, who scored a lot of goals for them last season. I think actually, just looking at the table now, they're the third lowest scorers in the league. And obviously, we talked about a little bit about Reading's defence, so hopefully we can keep a clean sheet. But I think Birmingham have got quite a good defence as well, so I don't think we'll see too many goals. But I'm going to go for a Reading win, so I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading win in this one.
You know, I might just be joining you on that. It does really feel like the sort of game that... It's definitely, definitely not the sort of game that we can go into thinking we are going to cruise to victory. This is going to be nice and easy. Birmingham went and got a point at Sheffield Wednesday recently, which was a late Sheffield Wednesday equaliser. They you know, are a team that have a bit of championship experience, and I don't think, as you said, Ollie, I don't think they're going to be in a relegation zone this year or fighting relegation. So Reading just maybe have to be a bit patient in this one, and maybe it'll be a case of having to switch up the formation if something doesn't work. But I think I am just about confident as well, and I'm going to join you on the 1-0 win, which with Reading at the moment, you know, you look at the table, we're 18th. 5 points clear of the relegation zone. A win won't really take us up the table much, but it'll certainly increase that sort of mid-table comfort. And there's a massive rabble of teams between sort of 6th and 16th at the moment, and the quicker that we can get in amongst that, the better. So hopefully that's what we'll be talking about. As I say, on Thursday morning, hopefully we'll have the Simon Cox interview up, and then probably next Sunday evening or Monday afternoon we'll have the... report from that Birmingham game online for the next episode of the podcast. Until then, thank you very much, Ollie, for joining me this time.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Reading are back in winning ways. They've got one man to thank for that. It's George Puskas. He has arrived. He's the hat-trick hero. He lives for score. Come on, you Arse.
Just starting to see, kissing out.